Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game.
On this episode, Head of Coach Education and Development Greg Patterson and National Goalkeeping Coach Fraser Stewart are joined by former Manchester United and Northern Ireland international Roy Carroll.
Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. A little bit different this week. Our friendly host Lewis Irons has succumbed to a football injury last night, but we're in the midst of Roy Carroll here at a UEFA Share event, so we thought best to go ahead. So we've drafted in a very able assistant in Fraser Stewart, who's going to try and host today. So we'll see how we go, and Roy's got plenty of stories that will keep us ticking over, I'm sure.
Might not be as good as Parkinson, but we'll see what we get. Roy, just we'll firstly go to the kind of study, the Share visit, because that's what we're kind of in our head at the moment, what we're here for. So how have you found it coming in as, obviously you're here as part of Seven Nations visiting us to see these where we're trying to take licensing and coaching within Europe. So how have you found the last 2 days?
I found it very interesting. I've just retired there from playing at Linfield there over the summer. Came in different countries, different ideas. Watching the young coaches coming through the B licence in the last two days, it was brilliant to see it. Taught me a lot of things. I played a long time, but you can still learn as a goalkeeper and as a goalkeeping coach as well, and that's my next step forward as a goalkeeping coach.
Yeah, it's been a intense and tough few days under Paddy Bonner taking us all through it. In terms of where you see things in Northern Ireland, where you're at the moment, you feel you've got plenty from the last 2 days to take back across and try and implement over there?
Yeah, we've talked, me and Alan Simpson came over here and we've learned a lot, both of us learned a lot the last 3 days, and it's just getting it back to Northern Ireland. Hopefully the IFA will take it on board and hopefully we can get things moving in Northern Ireland, because it's a big step up for goalkeeping coaching in Northern Ireland. We want more young keepers coming out of Northern Ireland over to like the England and Scotland, and even in Europe, mainland in Europe, because football's changing. A lot of young British players are moving across to mainland Europe, so we have to take all cultures in effect and see what way they work as well.
I think that's part of probably the discussions and the problems, isn't it? It's the fact we've now got, or now potentially could have, a UEFA B goalkeeping licence and a UEFA A goalkeeping licence, and maybe in some countries, you know, the professionalism, if you like, of that goalkeeping coaching role is maybe a difficult one to sell to the clubs, you know, because we're now asking these goalkeeping coaches to go through an awful lot of coach education, which will hopefully serve them well and should serve them well, but then are there those roles that will reward their kind of education, if you know what I mean?
That's the main thing, what we're trying to do, to talk to the Northern Ireland football clubs all around Northern Ireland to say what we're trying to do as well. Not just the IFA, we have to work together as a team, as a family, and tell them what we're trying to push forward for the goalkeepers for the future of Northern Ireland. That's the main thing, what we need to do as me and Alan go back to Northern Ireland, try and help the keepers out there. It's, at the end of the day, we're doing it for the kids to grow up to be a good keeper and learn the game as much as they can. And then teams like Linfield, Clintorne and Cliftonville, if they go into Europa League, what's going to happen with the goalkeeping coaches if they don't have their qualifications? So it won't be nice going to Europe and the goalkeeping coach isn't there because they haven't got the qualifications. So that's the big thing. We have to really talk about it and hopefully get over that fence and sort it out as quick as possible.
Yeah. And you've noticed quite a difference in Scotland, Fraser, haven't you, with goalkeeping coaches and the kind of that professionalism, as I call it, or the increased education for them?
Yes, certainly since the first of our pilot one started away back in Paisley at St Mirren, when UEFA came there as well, and since the involvement of that and where it is now, I think we are now on our fourth UEFA A course, with this being our first one as a UEFA B. What you tend to find is how realistic the actual coach education part of it's been to the role that they're now in. You know, the development of that goalie coach into what they're now getting asked to do at clubs within the coaching part alone, but also within the wider sense of the role in terms of talent ID, the scouting side, how do you develop kids up through your academy. All these things are brand new to a lot of coaches, especially maybe somebody like yourself, Roy, who fresh out of playing. Then how do we try and kind of educate you in that way of the wider sense rather than just the coaching on the pitch. So, but I've seen a massive development in our coaches, and a lot of them do speak about how the course helped them get into the role they're in rather than just being chucked into it, and that's you've got to try and learn on the job as such, you know.
I think as well, Fraser, like I think we did their goalkeeper licence out goalkeeping one 2 years ago, and it was very difficult. I think this B licence goalkeeping is going to help them to prepare better for for the A1.
Yeah.
The B licence outfield you need as well, because it's very important you're comfortable coaching outfield players.
Yeah.
That's very important because you're working with the outfield players as well, and I've learned a lot watching the young Scottish coaches coming through here, how they present on the field, and it's all about coaching not just the keeper, it's concentrating on the outfield as well.
It's a hard balance, because I remember doing my own A-licence and you found yourself coming away for the goalkeeper as such, but then you've got to try and get that balance of going, no, my sole focus is him, but you're still trying to keep
maybe it was like me doing my outfield badges. When I first done it was like I was always in the middle of the pitch, because that's where I was looking down the middle of the pitch, so you can see everything. But the tutor came up and says, Roy, move around, take different angles and different shapes, because you can see different angles and stuff like that there and on the play. For me, it's teaching them keepers to just move in different areas as well. Don't just stand there behind the keeper and watch the keeper doing all the time. Can you come outside the 18 yards? Can you come out 20, 25 yards to have a look in and see if you can work with the back four, and even the midfield sometimes will be coming in as well. So it's interesting to see what you have set up this week, and I've learned a lot, trust me, I've learned a lot.
So you think it's a good step, Roy, do you, in the right direction? Traditionally, as a, you know, with your playing background, were you kind of taking away, you know, the old adage of the goalkeepers are taken away into the corner, and that was your goalkeeping training? So that was the role of the goalkeeper coach.
We were talking last night, the coaches had all over Europe, like they were coming in and they were saying, what was it like at Manu, what was it like at Olympiacos? It was the same thing. Just go over there, we call you in 45 minutes. Then about 20 minutes, the coach was saying, we need the keepers.
We need the goalie after them.
So that's the big thing we'll have to try and change with the clubs. But it's hard to change when the manager's got his own ideas. If you lose on a Saturday, he doesn't want the goalkeeping coach coming in and taking the session. So it's one of those things we'll have to sit and wait and see how far we can push it. It might take 5 years, it might take 6 years, but it will definitely come. Trust me, it will definitely come.
I think it's the right thing, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the right thing, because we play off the back four for 24 years. I played behind the back four for 24 years, so I know how they play.
Yeah, of course.
I played against strikers for 24 years, so I know how they play.
Yeah.
So why can we not go out and coach the back four?
I think as well, in terms of the position we play, the viewpoint you've seen it at for so many years in terms of movements of things and how you see certain things happening, developing that reading of the game is such, for me it's such a massive tool that why as a manager or an outfield coach would you not want that knowledge of certain situations or certain experiences of what might happen?
It's just one of those things, is that going back to the old days, it's like, oh, he's only a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth. You know what I mean? I remember watching goalkeeping coaches doing the subs. That's all they got involved,
right.
Doing the subs,
right.
Stand up and do the subs.
Yeah.
But slowly but surely that you can see them now, you see the England goalkeeping coach getting involved, and when they score a goal from the playing out from the back and they score a goal, you see the goalkeeping coach loving it, because he's got that input in the game. So it's very interesting to see how far the goalkeeping coaches has come on. Trust me, they have come on a lot, but there's still a lot more to go.
I think as well, and it's the level of involvement you have. I mean, I think we're all saying, we're not coming in to say we're going to dictate to managers and coaches what they're doing, but it's even just having that place at the table planning training.
Yeah.
And understand it from, you know, sometimes practices are put in place and the goalkeepers are discarded that wee bit, where sometimes it can be, well, no, the goalies could be involved in that if you just tweaked it here, and here, then all of a sudden a practice becomes more of a better practice for the team, because there's more realisticness about it, that it's not just working in isolation as such.
It is, it's just, you don't realise how much work coaches do behind the scenes, even a goalkeeping coach, until you start doing it yourself.
Yeah.
I knew it 15 years ago, I think I would never fell out as many managers as I did before, you know what I mean? But it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work behind the scenes. you have to have a plan A, plan B, plan C. So goalkeeping coaches are doing the same thing. So what happens if the manager decides to cut the training short for 25 minutes? You have to have plan C. What you do, can you do the training after the training with the full outfield players?
Yeah.
So it's all about planning, isn't it? If you get that planning right, how can we get it out in the training pitch? It might change. So there's a barrier there. You have to might turn around and say, right, that's the barrier. I have to get over it again. We might have to do an extra 15, 20 minutes at the end of training.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully in a few years or whatever, it will come natural and everybody, the keepers will get the chance to do more things on the training fields, because you need to work as a team.
Yeah.
This is a team game. So why does a goalkeeping coach have to be at the other side of the pitch?
Yeah.
That's what I always say. It's always, there's no way in team. That's what I was always learning.
No, absolutely. I find it interesting being around these goalkeeping licenses for the past however many years, and I find it interesting then when a manager gets the sack and he leaves, the goalkeeping coach might still be there at the club if he doesn't leave with the manager, but it's the head of academy that gets the interim job or the interim position who doesn't know the players. And just as you're saying there, the goalkeeper coach is still been there, he knows the players, he's maybe been involved in the planning of training, games, picking the team, helping schedule the training sessions, etc, etc, but yet they bring in this head of academy who might not have necessarily, you know, been working as part of the first team and have that kind of insight and knowledge to how the players are and how they've been.
That's the thing. You can't just go think like a goalkeeping coach goes a license and goes in, does this, do that. He needs to know the knowledge. That's the main thing. Mm-hmm. If he goes in and the manager's asking a question, he doesn't know the answer. Like, it's one
kills
of those
him.
Things that kills him. Like, yeah. And when do you get a second chance?
Yeah.
So I'm not putting pressures on the goalkeeping coach, but you have to know the knowledge of the game and knowledge of what you're going to be doing, the planning and all that you have to plan for. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is a big thing.
I think that's one of the biggest things we use on the licence at the moment, is you're only just trying to prepare them for when it might not be the manager they work with just now or the coach they work with just now, but at some point, you know, I find the new younger coaches coming through want to have that everybody's opinion and they're all involved, so it's just preparing them for when the question does come, you've got the answer, because the last thing you want is starting from scratch again, and they've had that wee input and then.
How can you keep them young? That's what we're trying to do in Northern Ireland. What way can you keep them young goalkeeping coaches ready?
Yeah.
It might take 2 years, it might take 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can you make sure that they're ready in 3 years' time? They have to have a club or even academy, or like we have a set up for young players in Northern Ireland called Club and I.
Yeah.
And could we get them involved there, international level, and take them away at the camps in Spain,
just expose them to it,
see what it's like at national football. It's just very interesting to see what way we're going to go forward in Northern Ireland.
And given I used to be kind of head of coach education over in Ireland recently, Roy, and I always remember Packy when I worked with Packy talking about the kind of cross transfer of skills from. Now, I don't want to get all political here in Northern Ireland, but the cross-transfer of skills from Gaelic football. And do you find that is a benefit to kids over there, those that do play?
No, it is. I've opened a goalkeeping school in Northern Ireland. I've got two or three Gaelic keepers in.
Right.
They've got great hands.
Yeah.
They're positioning the wrong way.
Uh-huh.
Because the way they're standing goals, the hands up high, out wide. So it's they've got great hands. Can catch. We play rugby. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. Ireland always had good keepers who can catch a ball. It's just okay. Sometimes I didn't catch it, but it's one of those things. It's all about. But what else can we bring into it? It's all about getting the kids coming in and enjoying the goalkeeping situation. I've never seen so many goalkeepers in Northern Ireland who wants to be a goalkeeper. You know what I mean? Be a goalkeeper at a certain age. I remember when I was growing up, it was just like I was playing outfield and enjoying it and playing all different types of sports. Came on, being a keeper at 14 years old, enjoyed it, loved diving around the mud, getting dirty, diving all over the place. But now you have to basically let the coaches in Northern Ireland have to understand, outfield coaches have to understand, keepers go on goals and just stay there from 6 years old till they're 14.
Yeah.
So what are they learning?
Yeah.
Are they learning with the feet? Or they're learning whatever, you know what I mean? They have to.
And other sports as well.
Football's changed so much by the day I was growing up, because all we got, catch the ball, kick the ball up the pitch as far as you can. Now you're playing out from the back, you're doing this, doing that. So the coaches have to. I'm learning as well, because you never stop learning. Okay. I send the young keepers, I'm still learning, 42 soon.
Yeah.
I'm learning to be a coach. So I'm learning new things.
Sure, yeah.
you cannot stop learning from different things.
How you've seen, you know, you talked about a 24-year playing career, you know, so you, what was that, the back pass rule and things like that come in, and, or am I going, or am
I can't remember back that long, like, but yeah, it was difficult. My left foot, I couldn't kick a ball in my left foot, so I had to work on it myself, because I went to United when I was 23, I never had a full-time coach, so I was just getting height. I was trying to tell young keepers, you can't kick with the left foot, make sure you get height. Yeah. Because you can get height, you can get back in your goals.
Yeah, by
your time. If you're trying to kick it hard, you might shank it and go 10 yards and you might score. So until you get the strength in your legs, that's when you can kick the ball further. And that's what I learned. I still sometimes the back passes come in, you concentrate more on your left side than you would on your right side, because it's just natural. Mm. Just natural. Everything's natural on your right side, your strong side. My weak side was always my left, even saving shots my left, so I had to work hard on that side. Uh-huh. And that's just where life was as a goalkeeper back in the day, because we might have had a goalkeeping coach of the whole city once a month coming in.
Going back to your, obviously growing up in Northern Ireland and through your youth there, and you get that move to Hull, what was that like going for, you know, kind of growing up there, then coming across the water, and then you're...
It was a big change. I was scared, put my hands up, I was scared, I was nervous. Left a wee village outside Enniskillen, about 70 houses, one shop, and moved the whole city, which was the fifth biggest city in England.
What age were you at that point?
I was just turned 17. Mum and Dad dropped me off at the airport and thought we'd be coming home for Christmas, because as a YTS, we called them a YTS at the time, scholarship, you come home for 3 weeks during Christmas. But then I got in the first team after 2 months, and then... we had a game on Boxing Day, so I was sitting in the digs by myself, because my digs lady and the family went away to see her family, so I had a microwave Christmas dinner. So I had to ring my mum, and didn't know how to work the microwave. Put it on 2 minutes and press on, and that's it. That's how it works. But it was nervous, but the game was called off, by the way, Boxing Day, because it was snowed off.
How did that whole kind of process come about? Was it chucked in through an injury, and then all of a sudden there's a wee opportunity comes and you play, or no, was it somebody recognising?
It was a long story, like, but I was 15 playing against men in local football in the second team in five mile town. Couldn't get in the first team. So Ballymallard came in. They were playing like amateur football. It wasn't big or not that, but they travel around Northern Ireland, so no scouts. If you know Northern Ireland, you know where Lisburn is. Nobody goes past Lisburn. It's only 10 miles outside Belfast. No scouts ever go past there. So I was living in the countryside about 70 miles down the road, and I said, I have to move here to get a chance, because I'm not playing. I'm only playing for Manor. So moved to Ballymallard, 16 years old, played two or three games. Played up in Dundella in Belfast. And funny enough, it was Alan Fettis. He's the goalkeeping coach at the Academy in Man U. It was his brother played against me, Steve Fettis, and he scored a hat-trick, and we lost 5-2. And he came up to me and said, Hull City's looking for a keeper. I'm thinking, we lost five? Well, I let five goals in, and they're looking for a keeper. But I must have done something good. And I went over for a trial, and done about 2 hours training, and I broke my finger. So I thought that was me finished. I got a phone call a month later and said, we would like to sign you. And... you have to be in the right place at the right time, but you have to work hard. You have to work at it, hard at it, and you have to have the qualities to show how good you are when you get that chance.
And I think there's a great message. You told in your previous podcast, you told a similar story, Fraser, when Aberdeen signed you. You let in 26 or something.
It was first ever game 11 aside at that point, and it was, you know, it's no, you don't have the transition we have now. Like in Scotland, we go like, there's the fun fours, and there's the five sides, and there's the sevens,
the nines,
where you're boom straight in 11s, and it's this big massive goal, and it was something that 19, 20 odd nil, you know, we were horrific, but it was straight after that that at that point it was getting asked to sign with Rangers as a young kid, and you're going, you know, just watched what's just happened on the pitch. But it's getting young kids to understand that scouts will sometimes take the scoreline away from it and just look at you as a individual.
It's your manner of your how you promote yourself on the pitch when you're down 5-2. I could have put my head down and bother, but I was still going and that's what I'm saying to the young keepers. You have to doesn't matter if it's 7-0, I don't care. It's the development stage of your career.
Yeah.
You have to work on it. How are you going to develop kids if you don't play them again if you let 6 goals in? So that's what it's all about in football. And same as me, if you five goals late and you go on trials in England, you're thinking, am I getting someone going to laugh at me when I go to England or something? It's just, you start thinking. But now,
because you see young kids these days and they get so down about score lines and everything else, and it's trying to just, you know, take that away from them.
As a young lad, I hate it losing. I still hate losing.
Yeah.
Even five sides, I hate losing. Mm-hmm. My mum proves it. Like, she hated taking me to.
How did you get on in rock, paper, scissors the other day?
I've calmed down now. But my mum, she took me to tournaments and stuff, and she used to hate taking me because she knew what would happen if I lost. And it's just them things, like, it's just a hunger of winning games. That's what it's all about.
So you've played your last game, have you?
I don't know. People's asked me this question, and I'm saying you never know. 2 months down the line, I'm still doing my rehab in my knee. I've done my ACL, ruptured it there. I think it was the end of January. And people's asking me, are you going to come back? And I says, I don't know yet. If the hunger's there in the next 2 months, yes, I'll definitely come back. But I'm enjoying what I'm doing at the moment in Northern Ireland. I'm really enjoying it. I want to try and give things back to Northern Ireland keepers, because there's a lot of young kids out there. I want to give them a chance in life. And whatever I learned over the years, bring it on to them. And hopefully they can push on themselves.
Yeah, brilliant.
So you get yourself to Hull, you get yourself in the team, you start to establish yourself, then the move comes to go to Wigan.
Can I say one story before we move on to Wigan?
You carry on.
For any young keepers out there, or senior keepers, my first game was against Swindon away. I remember clearly to this day, and I was only 17, and it was 0-0 at half-time. Came in at half-time, I thought, this is easy. Came in a full time. We lost 3-0. So take each game as you think it's going to be last game.
And
work hard, because I would never do that again in my life. Never again. Never take anything easy.
You know, that move happens. You're at Wigan. What are you then thinking? Then you've had that move, and then it's.
I was nervous again moving, because I was settling in Hull. I met my girlfriend and my wife now. Yeah, my girlfriend. I met her at 19. She's my wife now, Kerry, and. We both moved to Wigan, but we had the move. The manager didn't want me to go, but we had the move because they bought everybody up for sale, because the club was in the finance really, really bad trouble. Like, so Wigan bought me, moved to Wigan, and that was hard because I was playing week in and week out at Hull, and then I went to Wigan and didn't get in the team until about 4 months. So that's another way of learning as well, because sometimes young players go in, goalkeepers go in and think, I'm going to be the number one. Mm-hmm. You can't think like that.
Yeah.
You have to think, you're working, you go in, you might have 2 or 3 bad games, get dropped. How do you react from that? Yeah. And that's the way I had to go. And it was difficult. It was hard.
I think as well, when you've went for being the number one and then you're the number two, it's probably even more difficult how you keep yourself ready, because you just don't know when that change happens that you go in the first team. And probably similar to what we're just talking about with coaches there.
Yeah.
When that opportunity comes, you need to take it. Because if you don't, then you're straight back out again. You've been waiting.
And that's what I'm saying about the young B license goalkeeping coaches. Like, what way in 3 years, if they pass, and what happens in 3 years, they don't get that job. What they have to keep working in between.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing. I was working hard in between with the other goalkeeper, because same again, we never had a full time goalkeeping coach.
So again, part time again. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was in 1999. And. We started spending money on players, but the backgrounds for goalkeeping were still very, very slow. So I was with Lee Butler, I think his name was. Yeah, Lee Butler it was. And we worked. I learned a lot from him because he was a big, big keeper, and teach me a lot of things on the pitch and how you behave in games and stuff, especially in League Two.
Yeah.
League Two, League One is very difficult. Learning your craft made you stronger, because you're getting smashed every week.
I think
so that's what it was like.
I mean, when we speak about some of our young goalkeepers up here in Scotland, we've got a thing just now. It's funny, I was talking to the Danish and Swedish counterparts, and they were saying they've got the same issue about not enough younger ones playing
lower league
men's football. Yeah, you know, they're in this almost protected academy system to a point, but there's got to become a point they need to experience the senior side of it.
I spoke to a lot of players who played under 23s in England, and said it's no point, because there's no tackling, no nothing, it's just passing, it's phases, this way, play that way, For me, when I was playing the reserves, it was old players from the first team coming in back from an injury, always having a bad time in the first team. They were playing the reserves, no matter. So you're playing against quality players, you're playing against senior players, so you're learning from them as well. And that's why I think when you're a young player, you have to learn from senior players. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing. When I moved on from Wigan to United, my decision was because I was going to get full-time coaching and I was playing with the best players in the world. I wasn't.
So you not really had full-time coaching until Manchester United?
Any time I get full-time coaching, Tommy Wright came in at Wigan a few times. International football when Pat Jennings was there. International. So how many times you play a season? Five times during the season with international. So it was hard. So full-time training I got when I was 23. Wow. Day in, day out when I was 23. So
obviously Wigan must have been in it. An extremely successful time for you because the big move comes to go to United from there. So how did that all kind of piece together and come about?
We opened a new stadium in Wigan. It was JJB Stadium, and United came to open it. And I played the first half, and I must have had a decent enough game because when I spoke to Sir Alex, he said we've been watching you for 2 years since that game, the first half.
Just show it's that opportunity one again. They picked Man United to open the game, and it just shows you the.
Well, I was supposed to be going to Everton as well. Chris Woods was interested me to go to Everton, but the money they couldn't sort the money out.
Yeah.
Went down to Leicester, talked to Peter Taylor, and he was happy for me to come down. We shook hands on it.
Yeah.
Driving down Monday, was going to drive down Monday morning and sign the contract.
Yeah.
And he rang me up Sunday night and said, Roy, I apologise. And I says, what's wrong? And he says, I'm going for experienced goalkeeper, Ian Walker.
Yeah.
Because they want Leicester just got promoted. So I said, you're the manager. There's nothing I can do. But I was upset, of course. Yeah, upset because I wanted to play in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So my agent rang me up and said, 2 hours later, Sir Alex wants to speak to you. So I don't know what I don't know if he's joking or what. I can't say what I said. So I put the phone down.
We'll
on
put
him.
It on after 9 o'clock.
So I put the phone down on him, and then he rang me back. No, Roy, I'm being serious. So I went down to see Sir Alex, and I spoke to him for about 2 hours. And about 2.5 hours of that was talking about my family and my personal life. You know what I mean? And then half an hour was that what he wanted me to be coming in to do and be the number two behind Barthez and.
Yeah.
Push him as much as you can, and I'm thinking he's the World Cup European, and I'm thinking how am I going to push him?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I enjoyed my 4 years there. It was really, really good. I've learned a lot from big players as well.
Yeah.
The attitude of big players. When I first went in that change room for 3 weeks, I was really scared to go in, thinking what am I going to say to these players? First person came up to me was David Beckham, shook my hand, and he said, "Hi, I'm David Beckham," and I just looked at him and said, I know who you are. And that was it.
That amazes me as well. Even you did that.
Yeah.
You did that when you came off the flight as well. I know you're Roy Carroll. I know I've seen you in the headlines up it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that humility about, you know, senior pros as well, I think. And I always get that in coach education courses as well. You know, last week, Johnny Hayes has just scored that second goal in the Old Firm game. The next day, he's sitting on a B licence.
Yeah.
Hi there, I'm Johnny Hayes. You know, it's incredible.
I think it's harder down the leagues because there's more players fighting for a living. And they're looking after themselves, but in the high level, the players are more, especially United. United was brilliant. Everybody was really good. The coaching staff was good. So Alex was really good, and the main man Roy Keane. We spoke a lot about football and outside football as well. But funny enough, Sir Alex was going to offer me another 4-year contract in January, my last year, and he says we're bringing another number one keeper in. So he says, go away and think about it. And I spoke to a few people, and Roy spoke to me as well. And it was really nice to have Roy's input in football.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to play football. I was at that stage now, I was 27. I wanted to go and play football. I've played in the Premier League. I was going to still play in the Premier League at West Ham, and won the Premier League medal, FA Cup. And I'm just thinking, I'm going to sit in the stands for the next 4 years. Is there any point? I'm a guy who wants to look back and talk to my grandkids, hopefully not too soon, but talk to my grandkids and say, I've played 600 league games and won the Premier League and the FA Cup. It would be nice to do that when you're old. And
there's not many players got offered the opportunity to be at Manchester United for 8 years, is there?
No, I know, but it's just the way I am. It's the type of person I am. Everybody said, when you're not staying, I says, I want to play. When I was 15, my first thing, the career teacher says, what do you want to do when you leave school? I said, a professional footballer. And he laughed at me. Because nobody out of Ellis gave. And I went back, yeah, I went back 5 years later, shook his hand. But, and that's all I wanted to be, professional footballer. I never knew I was going to hit the reach of Man U at the time.
Yeah, of course.
That's a bigger bonus. That was a bonus for me, making that. My first thing was professional footballer, playing for my country, and trying to go as far as you can. And that's what that was my bonus, winning the Premier League. Okay, another 4 years. Would have played another 10 games. Would have played 100 games. I don't know. But I wanted to move on and keep playing.
And what was the, if you spent that time as number two, was the reserve structure then, or was
there? Yeah, the reserves was very intense as well, like, because everybody wants to be at Manchester United, so it was really, really good, like, as well. And Ollie was my manager at the time as well. He came down. It was really good. It was interesting. It was interesting, the reserves, but I played 72 times for Manchester United.
Yeah, it's still a lot of games.
Over 4 years, it's not bad. It's a good average, is it not? 20 games a season, roughly?
I look back and I say, like, my last season, I played the most in my last season. So Alex could have just, in January, said, all right, you're not signing it.
Yeah.
Sit in the stands. But I played the whole season.
Yeah.
That last season?
He could have put me in. And that's how I respect the man.
Yeah.
My last game was in the FA Cup final against Arsenal. We lost in penalties. And that was two FA Cups in a row. And then so Alex was, he was so good to me, like, and he played me. He could have just stuck me in the sand and said, all right, and sit there for 6 months or 4 months, whatever it is. And then I enjoyed every minute of it. Learned a lot, trust me.
So as you say, Barthez is there when you go there. How was that, getting into that, like, that first morning's training, and you've got Barthez is coming and you're working? How was the dynamics of that? It's obviously a foreigner, and it's...
I was French, a French keeper. Like, I know him really well, like, because he won the World Cup, everything. He's won everything in football. Yeah. And walked in, and I'm quite tall, and I was looking down at him. I thought he was taller than he was. He's small. I think he's only about 6 foot. And see him jumping. He could jump. His timing for a cross was unbelievable. He was really, he got some height. But I remember when he was telling me, I think it was this I think it was my first season, halfway through the first season, he came up to me and says, Roy, we're not goalkeepers, we're footballers. I looked at him because at the time it wasn't what it is now.
What it is now, yeah, yeah.
And he was right.
Yeah.
He could see it happening. Yeah. He could see it happening. And I didn't pass any notice. Now everybody's doing it, playing from the back. Centre halves coming in the box now for goal kicks. So it's all about feet and hands. But the main thing is keeping the ball out of the net as well.
Definitely. Yeah. So here you go, you've had that obviously fantastic experience at Man United, but you've made that decision. You think, no, I need to go and play, I want to go and play. So it's West Ham comes up next. So how was that in terms of your
West Ham? I was looking forward to it. I heard a rumour they were after me a year before, but they missed out out getting promoted. So I was on a free transfer, moved down. Alan Pardew signed the contract, everything was done. First training session, driving in the training, done my back, car crash. There was a car, someone bumped into the back of me, and it was one of those things. I didn't pass any notice, but months and months later, I just started getting back pains. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, what's happening here? And I was carrying on, and I ended up getting injections on Saturday morning to kill the pain. I'm waking up and... Wow. Sunday and Monday, can't get out of bed, couldn't train during the week, and then injection again on Saturday for the game. So about nearly 3 months was playing without training. Mm-hmm. I was just getting in the game, playing, and getting injections, and I said, I can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
So I went to see a specialist, and he said, you're very lucky, Roy. You could have got foot drop. I've nerve symptoms the whole way down my leg. Wow. And he says, another month, you could have lost your feeling in your foot. So I went and got an operation in 2007. So that's when things started falling apart, because I got depression and drinking heavily because of the injury. And I thought I was never going to get back from the problems from the injury. But lucky enough, I got out of that problem after a few years. A lot of people close to me know about this. I was a very heavy drinker, and depression and all popped in, like, and... Yeah. Couldn't get out of it, but I was when I went to training.
Yeah.
I was happy. I was laughing, joking.
Yeah.
But coming home when I'm locked in a wee room,
it's when you're on your own,
thinking.
It's that, a lot of players speak about when they have that serious injury, and it's
See, I'm more worried about when I'm coaching kids now, or I'm on a team. I'm more worried about the quiet ones, and not the quiet ones. It's the loud ones I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who's what happened to me. I was coming, oh, Roy's a joker, get him out, he'll come out for a drink.
Yeah.
He'd be there, I'd be the first one there, last one to leave.
Yeah.
And that's what I was like. But when I'm behind closed doors, I was completely depressed, like, badly. And went on for a long time. Left West Ham, went to Rangers.
Yeah.
I wish I could put the clock back and go back to Rangers and give him what I know now.
Yeah.
I was 6 months up there, it was hard. Derby for a year and a half. Denmark for a year and a half. So you're talking about a good four and a half years.
Yeah.
I was drinking.
What was it? I know we made a chat earlier on before we're doing this, and then so you end up getting that chance to go to Greece as well. And you say Greece became such a good thing for you because,
I got a phone call from a Greek agent, and I don't know how I got my number, but he rang me and he said, "Do you fancy going to Greece? A wee club in Crete."
Yeah.
I said I would love to. Was off, this was in August time, and I think it was June when I went off to drinking. Haven't drank since June 11, 2010. So it was one of them ones I looked, I says right to my wife and my kids, shall we go out as a wee holiday for a week?
Yeah.
Went out, we loved it, The lifestyle was completely different, the sunshine, it was beautiful. Okay, the Greek people are really passionate about football, but
yeah.
I enjoyed that. I was at Offie, it was called Offie, for 6 months.
Yeah.
But my body when I went off to drink, I struggled for 5, 6, 7 months because
yeah.
I thought in my head I needed drink to keep myself going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that was happening for 6 or 7 months, and then I got a big move to Olympiacos,
yeah.
which is a big club.
Well, especially a massive club, yeah.
People don't understand unless you're out there, see how big
yeah.
they are.
Yeah.
And 2.5 years in Athens, it was fantastic. Really, really enjoyed it.
Funny, we were laughing the other night. We were looking at certain things and it came up, and we were laughing on YouTube and it came up, the hero of Olympiacos. So we were kind of chuckling away at ourselves, but it must have been a...
Was it me?
It must have been a really successful time. You always speak really fondly of it.
Yeah, the manager who was there at the time, he's Spanish. He's the Barcelona manager now, so I might give him a ring, see if he's looking for a goalkeeping coach. Thanks for we went to Moscow, yeah, it was we went to Russia and we played there, and it was like minus 13. And that was my debut, that was going to be my debut, but I never knew.
Yeah.
I was on the bench, but the goalkeeper got sent off last 15 minutes. We were winning 1-0 in the Europa League. Took me 7 minutes to get on because I had all clothes on, had rubber pads, see the doctor gloves, I had doctor gloves on with my normal goalkeeping gloves. Went on and saved the penalty, and the fans loved me. And then the second game in the return leg at home, I pulled my hamstring in the last 25 minutes and carried on with a pulled hamstring. And the fans just started. You give 100% to the club, the fans
yeah.
will appreciate you more and more and more. But it did butt me out for a long time with that, carrying on for 25 minutes with a hamstring, because it butt me out for a good, I don't know, it was 2.5, 3 months.
After that, was it?
Yeah.
And obviously as well, with all through that, you've had Northern Ireland under 21s experience there, but then you've 45 caps for your international teams.
My debut from international was it was Northern Ireland first team. It wasn't under 21s.
So you played there first before?
Yeah.
Did you not play in the youth structures at all?
Played there. I think it was one game in the Milk Cup, like, but I was never really. I wasn't from Belfast.
It's amazing that see that. With my role now, with the number of our younger goalies who are all desperate to play at 16, 17. But see the ones
yeah.
who actually, like Craig Gordon, David Marshall, McGregor, they didn't play massive amounts of youth games.
Right.
Even at 21s, it was like
That's
Jamie
right.
Langfield, Derek Souter played more 21s games than them, but just through circumstance, they go on and have
the
better international career.
Ways.
And it's trying to get younger kids to understand that's not the be all and end all.
Mm.
I was in club and I there for a while working with the under 14s, and you have four keepers and you have one tournament, you can only take two.
Yeah.
And so you have to talk to the kids, you have to explain to them, like, and I said the same thing. I said, like, look at me, I never played youth football. And my first cap was for the first team. at 18 years old. So if you can learn from the coaching what I'm giving you,
everybody's got a different path, absolutely, and it's just getting them to understand that.
Yeah, it's when you're there, you want to play. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's all you have as a young lad. You want to play. But if you have an experienced goalkeeper or experienced coach who's played in the level and can explain to him, like, I never played youth level, so they might take it in and say, "Oh, Roy never played, but he played Northern Ireland first team." So I bide my time.
You don't know
what kids think sometimes, don't you? You try and get in the mind of a kid at 14, 15 years old. It's hard, like, but you try and help as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
How do you look back? You've obviously, at the end of it there, you qualify for the Euros and you're going there, you're obviously excited, and we're just talking there about the wee injury creeps in. You know, do you look back with disappointment, or, you know, or do you still look back and just the whole thing?
It was 10 years before, I would have been very disappointed, but now it just says it's the way life is.
Yeah.
And how do you bounce back?
Yeah.
Before, how do you prepare for injuries? I was never prepared for injuries.
Yeah.
What was I doing when I was growing up? Playing, working, playing, working, playing. I was out for 10 months with an injury.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready for that.
No.
I don't know. Yeah. Nobody told me how to prepare for that in the right way. How can you? Because you can't until it hits you. So I wasn't strong enough to handle that. But now I am.
Yeah.
When I done my stomach, I had a stomach problem. Played the first five games for Northern Ireland in the qualifiers. And then woke up and started getting pains in my stomach and rushed in the hospital. And I was in the hospital for 2 days. And then Michael McGovern played against Romania and kept a clean sheet.
Yeah.
I can't put my hands up. You can't drop the keeper because I have to come back. Michael done well and worked hard, and I said to Michael, it's not your fault. End of the day, you've kept your spot and you fight and you keep working at it, but I'd be pushing you because I'd be right behind you to get that spot if you don't keep that high standards up. And that's what football keepers are like.
It's trying
to get, even as a coach now, you might understand that. Mm-hmm. How can you create that within your wee team of goalies, that they all have that, they're all pushing each other, because ultimately that makes a number one have to be better.
It's a new route for me being a goalkeeping coach. So how am I going to address three keepers and say, well, he's going to be playing this Saturday?
Yeah.
What way can I talk to him? What way can I talk to him? For me personally, I just give him the same way I'm talking for all year round. Just come on, lads, we're friends here. We have to work together. You have to prepare the right way in case he gets injured.
Yeah.
If he gets injured, you have to prepare the right way if he gets injured. Yeah. That's football. There's no point trying to hide behind the wall and say, oh, he's number one, and you hide from the other two.
Because your dad talks about the same, doesn't he? Your dad, Jim, when he talks about having Alan McGregor, David Marshall, Craig Gordon together, they all believed they were number one. In their own mind, they were all number one, but they all got on very well, and they all helped each other, and they pushed each other, and they drove each other. So it's a great kind of,
keepers are funny breeds, you know what I mean? Very funny breed, like, and that's, we work, and we know what it's all about, because when you go on that pitch, you want them to do well, you want the team to win. And
you don't want to draw one in, so you're in.
But you do want to play. Yeah. That's the funny thing about it. You do want to play, you know what I mean? But of course, you want your good friend. Me and Michael McGovern, I went up to see their training session there when they were over, and we're talking. Trevor Carson, Peacock Farrell, and Michael all come up and speaking away. And it's class to see them. It's nice to see them, you know what I mean? And that's what goalkeepers are all about. It's if you're not a goalkeeper, you won't never understand.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, that's the closeness as a goalkeeper. It's a special bond.
Definitely is. So what's in terms of now, obviously kind of finishing at Linfield there, you've got the injury, so what's, you're trying to get back, but then obviously that future of coaching,
doing my rehab to come back to play, because I don't want to be a goalkeeping coach who's overweight and can't kick a ball and do that. I want to be fully fit. I want a young keeper to look at me, or a senior keeper to look at me and says, yeah, he's a goalkeeping coach.
Yeah,
he's service is good and all that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to come back fully fit. But if I got that hunger back in the next 2 months, 3 months, I might come back play part time football in Northern Ireland again.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I've got a goalkeeping school. Anybody that knows me, I give 100% every time I do something.
Yeah.
So this goalkeeping school is taking a lot out of me.
Mm.
First time doing 5 weeks solid. I've never done it before. And the last week, I was really, really tired. It was hard work, but enjoyable, because I could see the kids learning and growing.
Yep. That's the thing. I've spoken on this podcast before in other episodes about just that all-encompassing nature of coaching, and it is, isn't it? And you're talking about your goalkeeping school there, and you're probably, just listening to you for the past 40 minutes or so, you're probably thinking, how do I make things better? How do I get the kids better? And that's probably where that kind of tiredness comes in as well, isn't it?
3 days, 3 days here. I don't think I've sat in a classroom that long before in my life. But
back to school.
So I was going back. When I left, my wife says, "Make sure you rest up." I'm going back. I'm going to be sleeping for a week before the goalkeeping school's open again. But it takes a lot out of you. You're thinking. You're trying to plan things, and you're doing it all, and. And people don't really see that. You just turn up and you volley, you do this, you do feet work and movement and enjoyment for the younger kids. But I plan that. You plan that, you're having a piece of paper, you've got it on a sheet, and you're saving them. You're saving them for the next 5 years, and then you go back that 5 years and see what you've done. And that's why I wish I knew that 15 years ago, how coaches plan things, because how much I would have learned and how much I would have respected the coaches. I do respect coaches back in 15 years ago, but it was different back then. You're just thinking, right, come on, let's go 45 minutes, let's do this, let's do that. That's how I thought that was, but it wasn't. Yeah. You learn something new every day.
So the old man did actually do some planning at Rangers.
Your dad was a good man to me. He worked hard, but at the time I was in a bad way. Even coming up the Rangers, I'm a Rangers supporter, I love Rangers, but it was a bad move for me coming up here, because I had friends coming over from Belfast, three bedroom apartment, had 10 people, 15 people staying every weekend, and it's not the right way to be. And I wish I could go back now. I wish I was like 10 years younger and come back again and play. I would love to, because I love Rangers.
It's great that you can talk about that, Roy, and we get so much of it just now. We've got kind of mental health embedded in our UEFA coaching licences. You know, we bring in a doctor to speak about that, and I'm always amazed at, you know, people come up and naturally thank the kind of presenter, you know, after the lecture, but I'm always amazed the amount of people that hang back and want to speak to that doctor after the mental health, because it affects so many people, and I don't think you realise until, you know, good people like yourself are able to come out and do what you've done there and speak about it.
My biggest problem with it is, like, we can't come out earlier because we're still professional footballers.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Is that a weakness, do you think?
It's a strength. In my mind, I was worried about everybody else.
Their perception of it.
What are they thinking? What happens to the manager? Roy Carroll, or another goalkeeper who's got no problems, but Roy Carroll's a great keeper. I'm not that good, but Roy Carroll's a great keeper.
Yeah. The stigma gets attached to him.
He's depression. He drinks a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I came back from Greece, one club. I thought playing Champions League, Europa, I'd come back playing maybe mid championship or lower championship. Notts County came in, the only team that came in for me. And because the rumour was going around, Roy's a bad man, stay away from him. But nobody knew me when I went to Greece for 3 years. I cleaned myself out and done
it. Almost like you, yeah.
And everybody just thinking, yourself. People just thinking what I did 10 years ago, whatever, you know what I mean? Okay, I hate losing, so I've got that hunger to win. I've got that attitude to fight, you know what I mean? That's me. That's just the way it is. I'm not shouting at people on the pitch to upset them. I want the best out of them. Yeah. And that's what, but football has changed, so I have to change. You have to talk to them more. You have to talk to them in a different way.
And whilst you're talking about coaching, I think you've now got that good story to tell about the kind of mental health side as well. Because it's so prevalent nowadays, you know.
But you look at players coming out now, or any sports person, it's after the career's over. Why is that?
Why is that fear?
Would the clubs welcome of open arms if they go away for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months?
Yeah,
there's very few. No, you're right. That's what happens.
Yeah.
So what happens? You block it in and just leave it there, and then when you retire, that's when it all comes out. Thank God, I'm finished. I can talk about it now. It's sad. It is sad because there's a lot of people in Northern Ireland who doesn't talk about mental awareness, and a lot of suicides in Northern Ireland. That's really hard.
No, it definitely is. Probably the more you can expose, like using guys like Roy to expose that as much as you can, you hopefully just hope that others take some strength for that. And
you see a young lad watching or listening to this here, or watching anybody like Neil Lennon. Neil Lennon's went through a bad time. I respect Neil Lennon. He's a good man, and what he's went through and what I've went through. If I could help one person, I'd be over the moon. I'd be happy, because that's what life's all about, is helping people. But you see that when you get older, and you can't come out. You can't come out early enough. I wish I came out when I, 2008. I was in a bad shape. Yeah. But I still had a career to think about.
It was a great career.
I had to think about a career, because if I come out and says, "Oh, I'm drinking," I was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Basically, I was an alcoholic. I still am. I can't touch it. But would the manager take and say, "Oh, would he go back on the drink if we go through a bad time?"
Yeah.
No, that's true. So in terms of yourself now, we're actually looking through some things earlier, and there was a wee. Am I right in saying there was a wee kind of caretaker role at Barnet for a point, and where you were kind of. In charge,
I don't know how that came across. I was talking to someone before about it, I think what it was, the manager left to go to Notts County, Martin Allen, I think it is.
Right.
Yeah, Martin Allen. And he went to Notts County, and then they had a cup game, London game, playing Stevenage, and we won 2-1, and then I just retired.
100% record.
100% record.
But anything like that would ever push you in, or is it?
I would love to. Yes and no.
Because there's no many.
I'm getting more yes now, thinking about it.
Yeah.
But if you told me a year ago, no.
Yeah.
But I would probably like to try and be a manager, see how it goes, because I don't enjoy it. I enjoy doing my outfield coaching badges. Really enjoy them.
What have you done? A license, pro license, B.
B. Yeah.
B.
But I've done that, and then I want to get on to the goalkeeping badges to get that, because I want to try and give back to the international. Hopefully, try and get something done in international football. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's the thing.
You need the goalkeeping license.
Yeah.
And it does help, because people say, "Oh, why do you want to go there? You've got loads of knowledge." Yeah, but I haven't got the knowledge from the other side. How can I reply that to the players on the pitch and the players as a goalkeeper? That's what I'm.
But you're in the right place, and you've got the right kind of, for me anyway, for what it's worth. You know, I just keep hearing the same thing. You want to help people, and that's
it's one of the main qualities about it.
Exactly, it just keeps coming back to that. And as long as you've got that drive, you probably just want, you'll take it forward, and as you say,
the thing is, what you're saying is, I want to help people, but I can't just do it myself.
No,
and that's the thing. Mm. I went back to Northern Ireland 3 years. I was in club and I think it took 2.5 years to somebody come to me to speak to me to take the keepers in club and I. Mm-hmm. I was a bit annoyed with that. Mm. But that's football. That's where life in Northern Ireland is. So when I got that call, I said, yeah, definitely, I'll come, do it, no problem, I'd love to do it. And I started getting the taste of coaching young goalkeepers. Mm. Then I started doing talks to the kids, outfield players, when I was at West Ham and stuff like that. There, we played a tournament in West Ham, and giving them a little bit of advice and the way of life is, like, take each training session as your last, because you never know what's around the corner. You keep working hard and building yourself up if you can. And that's what I said to the kids, and came away from it thinking, I enjoyed that.
Mm.
Enjoyed that feeling.
Fulfilling almost, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
And the kids looking up to you. All right, some kids didn't look up to you. Someone will call you Carol, you know what I mean?
Who's this guy taking me?
Who's this old guy here with a big grey beard on? But I do probably, looking down the road, think maybe 4 or 5 years down the line, be a manager, but I want to get my goalkeeping badges, because that's what I know all about.
Brilliant.
No, thanks very much, Roy.
Top man, that was great. Thank you.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.